Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game.
Know your role and shut your mouth. You jabroni.
Float game for the win.
Touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop!
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Happy, happy Friday! How are you? Welcome aboard. Glad to have each and every one of you here today. Welcome into Indiana Sports Beat Radio. It's going to be a decent Friday. As far as weather goes, we're getting up there. It's going to get up to around 60 around here. Wind, though, my goodness. Anchor it down, baby, or you may be blown away as the spring winds have just been whipping through. And I know we've got our wind advisory, so be careful out there and just keep all your stuff batted down. Looking forward to another fun day. Alec Lasley will join us from the Hoosier.com, Zach Osterman from the Indy Star, as well as our friend Mr. Bill Bender from the Sporting News. How is your day started? How did your week go? If it wasn't as good as you'd like, now you've got to the weekend. Happy to have everybody. Brian says the IndyCar in Arlington practicing this afternoon. Yeah. IndyCar, baby, right around the corner. Looking forward to that. Is that at COTA then? I assume if it's in Arlington, or is that a separate track? But I mean, why would you not use COTA since it's a great road track down there? Oh no, it's Arlington, Texas. I was thinking of Austin. That's down in Austin, right? So Arlington. Oh yeah, Arlington. They're racing around the stadiums. How about this for this IndyCar race? Yeah, they're racing around Jerry World and I forget the official name of it now, the home of the Texas Rangers, but I must have written that down yesterday. But yeah, it whatever name of that place is, something field. But yeah, they race around the stadiums, man. That's kind of unique. I love things that are unique like that. So very cool. Looking forward to Alec Lasley and Zach and Bill jumping on with us today. I know there's plenty to talk about. I know that tournament's still going on. Obviously, the Big Ten tournament and all the other tournaments. We'll be talking about those, getting you caught up. Indiana is adding more experience in on the football side of things. Although they did just have a decommitment, which was a little surprising, but that's going to happen when you have the talent that Indiana is pulling in. Jahide Brown, kid out of Louisville, went to Christian Academy, or he goes to Christian Academy, whatever, decommitted. 4A wide receiver. Louisville and Kentucky are on his trail, of course. No surprise there. Man, I can hear the wind whipping outside of the ISB studios here. Crazy. But yeah, that's there you go with that. Uncle Phil pointing out Braden Smith assist hunting big time yesterday with 16 assists, only 5 points. Yeah, he's trying to get that record, isn't he? He knew he had a team that he could really pick apart, and he did so. And, hey, yeah, you can tell that that was, let each live the however they want. Who cares? Derek says every year they opt out of playing in any postseason tournament only to have the same lousy season the next year. Why can't they continue their season in some fashion after the Big Ten tournament? He's all for it. Well, unfortunately, Derek, you're in the vast minority. That's the quick answer. Most fans don't want to see it. I'm not. We're not going to get on another downhill slide like yesterday, but I truly believe most fans don't want to watch any more of this current team play. I don't know that that current team wants to watch any more of that current team play. Number two. Number three, what good does it do the team? None. Zero. So, because you can't, there's only a few guys that are even the possibility of coming back. So there's no point in it. You're way better off putting your resources, your focus towards being the best that you can be next season now. Last year, because that was part of the problem. Kind of got that we're behind the eight ball. A lot of the players, a lot of the best players had already committed to other teams by the time this deal came into play. So, I'm saying I'm all for shutting it down. We'll talk to Alec about that very thing. We'll ask him that as well, but I'd bet a dollar against a dozen donuts. He's going to say the same thing. As Cindy points out, if most of the team or a good enough portion of the team, I'll interject for her, were coming back, I could see playing in a postseason tournament, but most of those guys are gone. Exactly. So there's that. And that is the sure, the long, and the short of it. Look at it this way. Now you get to enjoy the rest of the tournaments just by watching and hoping that next year you're going. Now, here's something curious, and this may piss off some people. But, you know, there's a lot of complaining that is going on right now. But of all those complainers, how many of those are contributors to NIL? Just a thought. Just something that came to my mind yesterday. And I'm not saying everybody has to be, but it's kind of like, you know, it just makes me think of voting. If you're not happy with who's in office, if you're not happy with your mayor, if you're not happy with whatever, did you vote? If you don't vote, you can't complain, pretty much. So, you know, but there's that. Enjoy the tournament. Enjoy the tournament. I think that Indiana fans could really use just a dose of just Goosefraba. And if you're not a fan of the movie Anger Management, you'll think I'm crazier than you probably already think I am, but that's okay. Enjoy the tournament. Is my best advice. Sit back, watch it, watch different things, and enjoy basketball. Just enjoy basketball. You just had a football national championship. Don't let that bask in that some more. Enjoy that some more. You're getting ready to go into spring football. Jeez, I mean, literally Spring practice is what, 2 weeks away or something like that? It's nuts. Totally crazy. Hey, speaking of totally crazy, I'm still here. More coming up. Take a quick pause for the cause. Alec Lasley will join us right after we take that break. Back with more right after these messages. Welcome back. Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Friday. Alec Lasley from thehoosier.com joins us now. Hello, Alec. How are you, sir?
Doing well. How about yourself? Try not to blow away today, but other than that,
brother,
I'm right.
Telling you, I talked about a minute ago. I'm like, wow, make sure it's anchored down. The winds are howling outside and a wind advisory out there, but hey, it's spring. You got your favorite kite ready to go?
No, I do not. I'm not a kite flyer, and I will not be going outside much today. Be staying inside and watching some basketball. So
there is plenty of that to do as the not only the Big Ten, the Big 12, all of these the SEC, all of these ACC tournaments are rolling on. Thoughts so far? We'll start with Big 12. Anything popping out of the Big 12 to you?
Yeah, the floor. Did you see this morning?
Yes. Wow. What a segue.
Yeah. So, I mean, if anyone hasn't seen it, obviously, we talked about it, I think, 2 weeks ago or something, the LED floors. They tried that with the women's Big 12 tournament, and then they kept it for the men's. But last night, they had so many people complaining about it and players slipping that they decided to change it. So they changed it in the middle of the night back to what is going to be a normal floor for the games today, which is crazy to me. You go into the I think they're at the semifinals now. I think they finish up on Saturday. So they're at the semifinals. So you get the four best teams in the conference now switching floors mid-tournament. It's a disaster. They never should have done this. I think you and I talked about this before, that it was the most ridiculous thing to do an LED floor. And now you're seeing them switch it. So that's my initial thought of the Big 12.
First of all, as a player, there's no way that if that's changing, there's no way that you can't, that doesn't hit your eye line at some point. Maybe it doesn't matter what, and that's ridiculous to have something like that even in play. And that's even before we got to the injury, potential injury portion of it. Yeah. I mean, I'm all for people like trying to do things that are good, but hey, nix it. We've got technology, use it.
Other than that though, I'd say Kansas is the one team. Now you got Darren Peterson, who's healthy, starting to play a little bit more consistently deep into the second half. I think that's a team where had a gritty win last night against TCU. That's a team where I think if they get hot, they can definitely go on a run the way that they learned how to win without Darren Peterson late in games. Now, if you bring him back, obviously he's going to be a top three pick in the draft this summer. They're starting to come around. I don't think you can ever doubt Bill Self in the tournament. But that's a team where outside of the floor LED court, that's another storyline that I think is something to watch coming out of the Big 12 here over the next 48 hours.
Yeah, looking forward to it. SEC also, man, they came in at the beginning of the season, weren't look like it's going to be a great, as good a year as it was. And of course, it's not 14 teams in last year, but boy, they're slowly kind of building up. They're going to be sending some teams to the tournament.
They're going to be sending some teams, and I think they're going to be sending a lot of teams out early. I don't think the SEC is very good. I think everyone's kind of hyper-focused on probably two storylines here over the last month, which has been Auburn's bubble talk and then Kentucky's roller coaster of a season. Obviously, Kentucky is a great win. Yesterday, they seem to be kind of hitting a little bit of their stride here as of late. But I think
probably bad for Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, look, Auburn, I think is destined to be in the first four, and I think we'll eventually get to this topic with Miami of Ohio. I think it would be absolutely terrific if you put Auburn and Miami in the first four in Dayton and have those two face off. You get the Bruce Pearl storyline. Obviously, you know, a lot of people are talking about that. And look, I think Auburn is a terrible bubble team. You have to win games, right? I think I saw that this would be the most losses by an at-large team ever. They're one game above 500. They're four games below 500 in SEC play. They have strong metrics, right? Because they played, you know, Michigan, they played Houston, they played some really strong non-conference teams, lost all of those, right? That's why their record is what it is. But you have to win in your conference if you want to get in the tournament, in my opinion. And
why should they get in?
Because the bubble's so bad. The fact what I came into this after all those bubble teams lost before Indiana had played, I think if Indiana had won just one game, they'd be in a conversation where they theoretically could have gotten in.
You mean like either of the Northwestern games?
Well, I'm talking about just conference tournament, but yes, either of those games. But I'm just talking about conference tournament. The fact that so many of these teams lost in the first round, that gives Auburn even more of a leg to stand on because they at least won a game in the conference tournament. So a lot of people, right, if you want to compare resumes, I think you look at the last team in, theoretically, in my opinion, should be Auburn. And you look at Auburn and Texas as those two teams. Texas didn't win a game in the conference tournament. Auburn did. You move them in. I think you have to win a game in your conference tournament if you're on the bubble there. And obviously you look at a lot of the teams like VCU is still at large. Seton Hall is still moving on. Those are probably the two. Oklahoma is the one that's surging. I would say those are the three that you really look at. But outside of that, I mean, you had so many other teams that one did not look like an effective basketball team coming late into the season here. And then two, you just had so many that lost early on in the conference tournament. And that's something that I don't think you can really do if you're on the bubble, right? You need to keep winning. I understand you need to have quality wins, but at the same time, you still need to keep winning. So you look at, obviously, Indiana lost. New Mexico, I believe, could still be in there. I haven't followed some of the other Mountain West, but NC State obviously lost. UCF got blown out. But again, NC State, UCF both won a game in the conference tournament. So that's where I think you kind of lay out. I think it's going to come down to potentially that first four game. And I am 100% in the corner of sending Miami there. Look, they had a great season. At the same time, their metrics are horrendous. They're not – if this bubble was any better and if they maybe lost one game in the regular season, I don't think we're talking about them in the tournament. They're in my opinion, they are a – quality team, but I don't think they're a very good team. And I hate to say that with a group that obviously went undefeated in the regular season, but they didn't play anyone. Almost entirely all their games are quad three, quad four. They played multiple Division II opponents. They almost lost four or five games coming down the stretch. They needed overtime and double overtime. I don't think they're a team that should just automatically get into the field of 64 there. I think you send them to Dayton and you make them show that they could compete against a bottom level feeder team in the SEC in Auburn. I think that'd be great. You get a ton of Miami fans there. If you don't send them there, look, I don't think many people are going to watch the first four this year because of how bad a lot of these teams are. So I think you send them there, you boost up some TV ratings and you go from there, but we'll see what happens. But that's what I would do. I think hottest team could be in the country right now. One of them is Oklahoma, and they're definitely making their mark in the SEC.
Yeah, I'm looking at Mike DeCourcy's brackets right now, and Indiana is in the first four out, which, any other year, it's nuts. But because this is a softer, much softer bubble than last year, and last year was Charmin soft, and so it just further reiterates the fact that I wonder what in the world that Charlie Baker is thinking when he wants to expand this tournament. Who expand it to whom? Expand it for whom? For why? So we can watch a 17 and 16 Auburn team play whatever the hell the records of Cincinnati and Oklahoma State and even this Indiana team.
Yeah, and most of these teams outside of Cincinnati that were theoretically right on the bubble all had a below 500 record in the last month of the regular season. I mean, that's just atrocious, right? Teams that need to win games to make the NCAA tournament are losing games. And I mean, we said it. I think you look at the last game of the regular season at Ohio State. Every single bubble team that Indiana needed to lose lost. All Indiana needed to do was show up in that game. And that's just it's just a microcosm kind of how the season went, where, you know, it just seemed like Indiana had so many lives, that so many chances, so many opportunities, and they never
along with Lamar Wilkerson.
Sorry about that. Yeah, and a lot of discussion about that. What does that tell you? We know that this team was undermanned. And we know it was undermanned in certain areas, but there was more to that because they were competitive earlier on. They were competitive throughout the first two thirds of Big Ten play. And then with, you know, the last six games or so, they imploded. And it wasn't because they played the top six teams in the Big Ten either. They had opportunities, and at Northwestern at home is one of those. What was it that you saw? Something I saw in the tournament that I noticed when they lost Northwestern is I did not see a team. I saw Northwestern walk or coming off the floor. Boy, were they a team, but you could tell. Excitement, togetherness. I saw none of that with this Indiana group. They're just a group of guys that were on the same team.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's two things for this, and I'm not sure if we talked about this last week or the week before, but you know, I had a column after I think it was one of the recent losses here to close out the season, and it revolved around, I think it may have been Ohio State, but it revolved around how this team did not have a winning pressure mentality. You had a lot of veteran players, right? But that does not go a long way. Everyone talks about veteran players and veteran leadership. You could have someone again who's a sophomore, but who started every single game on a team that's gone to the NCAA tournament or gone to two Sweet 16s or won games in the NCAA tournament. This team has, finishes their college careers with two NCAA tournament wins, if that, with what they've been able to do. They only had five appearances. Sam Alexis was the only one who, made a deep run in the tournament. And that was obviously playing 1 minute last year on Florida's national championship team. So they did not play in pressure-packed moments. They did not know how to win games, and that's one unfortunate part where this team looked like it was going to be able to win games a few different ways, right? Either by shooting the ball, being gritty and playing with energy and playing with toughness and just kind of finding a way in the first half of the season, even in some of these huge deficits, right, they always found a way to come back. They always found a way to make it competitive, and that was one thing that this group was trying to kind of hold its hat on and really, you know, be able to be the backbone and the identity of this group. And obviously as the season wore on, that was anything but. I think that's one aspect of it, right? But two, it was really interesting. When I was at the post game press conference there with Chris Collins, and Northwestern went first. They had the winning team go first and then the losing team go second on Wednesday here in the Big Ten tournament. And all that Chris Collins was talking about was playing with urgency, playing with a fire. He one quote that I, it may not be exactly word for word here, but he basically talked about his pregame speech where he said, you know, if you can't get up for a game in the United Center, in the Big Ten tournament, playing a university like Indiana, then you should just turn in your jersey and not even walk out there. And listening to everything that he had to say, it was all around playing free, but playing with urgency, playing with energy, playing with a purpose. And then you flip it. And as Indiana was walking out, they had Lamar Tucker and then Darren DeVries. And I'm thinking to myself as they're walking out, what are they going to say? Because it's not going to be what Chris Collins just talked about. And that's the disappointing part, because you had a group of seniors who were on their last minutes of their college careers, and they were still playing for something. It's not like they were seniors who, you know, were just kind of playing for themselves at that moment. They still had a shot to make it in the NCAA tournament. And a lot of these guys had not been in the NCAA tournament before. And a lot of these guys were trying to go back maybe for the second time too. Tucker DeVries, obviously a guy who hadn't had a great season, but what was a guy who was a heralded, you know, transfer, a guy like Lamar Wilkerson, who, you know, really was the only one who showed up the entire season. But outside of, you know, those two guys, there was not a lot of emotion shown on the floor. There was not a lot of emotion shown after the game. And it just was really disappointing and almost confusing to hear the difference in messaging. You know, I asked Tucker, and I thought this was pretty notable. I asked Tucker DeVries when the players were up there about specifically the defense, right? Because when you see a group fold, you typically see it defensively before the offense folds. And one thing that he talked about was, you know, how much they had stressed defense over the last few weeks, especially the last few days. And that if you're not connected and there's just one piece not connected, teams at this level are going to be able to pinpoint that and destroy that specific defense. And I thought that was really telling, because how could a group that had played so much basketball on their last leg, right, trying to win a game, just one game, not be connected? And I thought that showed more than anything that they didn't trust each other at the end of the season. They didn't trust where the help side was coming from. They didn't trust where, you know, where, what the system was supposed to set them up to be. They didn't trust the scheme. They didn't trust the coaches. They didn't trust the plays. They didn't trust anyone except for themselves. And that showed, and that goes back to your point, right, where, you know, it was more of an individualized group out there than it was a team. And I think that quote by Tucker really showcased that, because you could see that the last seven games they gave up almost 1.4 points per possession on average in those losses, and that's atrocious. I mean, that is horrendous basketball. They were giving up and allowing teams to shoot, you know, 55-60% from the field in some of these games, and specifically in a half. And you're not going to win any game when you do that, regardless of what your offense does. You could hit 12, 13 threes, right? I mean, look at that Purdue-Wisconsin game to close out the season. Purdue had, I think they scored, what, like 85, 90 points, but they gave up like 19 threes. It doesn't matter what you do offensively if you cannot control a little bit of the defensive end of the floor. And I thought that was just really telling to show that this group completely broke, and it showed with the defense. And Tucker really kind of highlighted that with his comments there about really just not trusting where everyone was going to be on the floor at all times. And obviously that showed, and then that carried over to the offensive end as well.
Alec Lasley from thehoosier.com with me right now. Let's take a quick break. We'll continue the conversation and talk a little bit about what potentially next year might look like for Hoosier fans, because I know that is a big question for them. But that and plenty more. Appreciate you being with us on this Friday. Happy Friday. Back with more right after we take this pause for the cause.
Already. Just in general, what are skill sets you want to add to this roster moving forward that you think are going to be really impactful for next year?
As we've talked about it a little bit as the season's gone on, just you know, developing more depth and having more size and physicality, you know, for this league is going to be critical. I thought you know, that was something that you know, we just didn't have a lot of depth there to sustain it over, you know, the course of a 20-game league schedule. So that's certainly something we have to prioritize to give ourselves just a better chance on the interior, you know, the rebounding and you know, being able to post and, you know, be able to get guys in and out and sub and have some depth there. So that, you know, it's something that we'll have to really, really search hard for.
That was Darren DeVries talking about what potentially they might need to add next year. So I am really, he didn't talk about scoring in the post, which I noticed. So while we know that the 3-point shot is the primary weapon, something that I noticed here down the stretch with Sam Alexis is, and while he had some good games, but there were many times, Michigan State game, the last game, the ball comes into the post to him, and he's not even thinking about scoring. He's just thinking about someone to pass to. Now, I don't know if those are just set plays, but neither time did his head even consider going to the rim.
Yeah, I mean, look, he had it was, and Darren DeVries talked about this, I think, midpoint of the season. It was right after that Wisconsin game where, you know, they went to him, I think, four or five straight possessions on the block, one-on-one, and he scored all four or five of those touches. And DeVries talked about how, you know, it was on the coaching staff early in the season where Sam Alexis had that potential as a scorer. But it was almost the coach's fault and the staff's fault for not putting, either, you know, different plays in or putting him in position to do that. And then we got towards the end of the year here and he became much more of an offensive factor, and showed a little bit more of that versatility as a scorer, but he was never going to be, you know, that guy who could, you know, average 13, 14, 15 a game for the course of a season. And again, he did that in spurts, but not for the entirety of a year. Look, I mean, I think scoring and playmaking, regardless of the position, regardless of the size, are the two key things that Indiana needs. But you also need that physicality and the depth up front. And, you know, Darren DeVries has now talked about it multiple times, even dating back to middle of the season on one of his radio shows where he first, you know, kind of showed a glimpse of, hey, we probably messed up by not trying to add a little bit more depth in at least.
But this is not something we didn't know a year ago. So my question is, what was it that they were thinking? So this was done with purpose then. They did not think that they needed anything else for.
Well, I think again, you look at not that Josh Harris was going to come in and average, you know, 20 a game, but you had another body there. Then you have the ability.
It's not a body, but none of these bodies are what I call paint type bodies. None of them.
But he's way more of an athlete around the rim, and that's what you didn't have. You didn't have athleticism with Sam Alexis and Reed Bailey at the five position. Sam Alexis was able to bang a little bit and bring some physicality, but he wasn't able to do that for 20 minutes, right? He could do that for maybe 10 minutes from a true physicality standpoint.
How much would Malik Renu have impacted a team like this, do you think?
I think that's a moot point, right? I mean, I think anyone from last year's team was not going to.
He didn't have to be on last year's team. I'm just saying a player like that who.
Well, I mean, obviously a guy who's going to go to a different team and average, you know, what, 20 a game and be first team all conference is obviously going to impact Indiana's roster in any sort of way, especially at that position.
But that style of player, and that's what I don't understand. Why was not one guy like that? That's the questions that I have. That's why Ryan Carr's on staff now. Exactly, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, that's one reason, right, too. I don't think, you know, I think the staff missed out on a couple guys that they were going after. And look, the front court players, you know, major names in the portal are extremely, extremely expensive. I don't think people understand how expensive a dominant front court player is. And I'm not saying Indiana had to go out and get the top overall center in the transfer portal class or anything like that. But I mean, that costs the two positions are point guard and center that really draw out an NIL budget. And look, I mean, Indiana missed on a couple guys. They had to stretch their budget to get Lamar Wilkerson. And with that, then they didn't have a lot to kind of go out. And they also kept a spot open, potentially thinking that they could keep Luke Goody with that waiver. And they went in a little bit closer to, you know, the summertime with that open scholarship. And I'm sure, you know, hindsight's 2020, right? If they knew that potential waiver wasn't going to get approved, then they would have gone out and probably landed someone a little bit early on than waiting till the summer that Asimovich ended up taking the scholarship for. But look, I mean, you can say whatever you want about how the roster was put together. They obviously swung and missed on a lot of players. I'm not defending, you know, what the staff did with this roster.
Well, I don't know a lot of it. That's why I just have questions and I don't know a lot of the answers. And that's why I'm saying.
But I will say the only good part is they have 100% come out and taken full responsibility for the roster that they put together. They have also addressed the needs that they need to attack in the portal. They have addressed the needs by also bringing in Ryan Carr. I think they're doing all the right things right now to set themselves up for a big summer. Now we can, you know, move forward 8 months from now and look at the roster and say, hey, that's another swing and a miss, and probably be able to tell whether or not this team's going to be successful or not. But at, you know, March 13th, right, with Indiana season pretty much done, we know that there were a lot of misses on this roster now, but the staff has taken full accountability for that, which they should. I'm not trying to hold them up on a pedestal here for saying that, but at least they're being open about that. At least they're being open about what they need. And look, the Big Ten is a regardless of how college basketball is trending more towards, right, the non-traditional two big lineups, the non-traditional centers, the forwards who can shoot the three ball. It doesn't matter. The biggest thing is whether you're in the front court or the back court, it is a physical style of basketball, regardless of what position you're at. A lot of these guys were not physical. It doesn't just start with the front court. You need your guards who really, especially defensively and offensively, right? You need the guards to be physical, to be able to either get by a defender or to hold an offensive player in front of them. And we saw multiple times that these guards, their inability to beat someone off of the dribble is not just quickness. It's the physical play. I mean, Minnesota manhandled.
They don't have the size.
It's not just about, I mean, look at Jacoby Gillespie, right? A guy who played at Maryland, now at Tennessee, smaller guard, but he has quickness and he also has a physical edge to him, right? Not throwing Tate and Conaway under the bus here. He has the quickness, doesn't really have the physical edge to him. So, you know, when you look at the roster construction there, yes, a lot of people are going to be hyper-focused on the front court. Absolutely, that is a major factor for why this team failed to make it to the NCAA tournament this year. But all of basketball starts on the perimeter, right? You don't get to the basket unless you pass the first test, which is on the perimeter. So you need physicality on the wing with your guards, with your playmakers on offense to be able to get into the paint. You also need physicality and length and strong defenders on the front portion of that defense on the perimeter to force the offense to start their sets, you know, 5-6 feet beyond the 3-point line, which we saw Indiana have to do multiple times. So it's not just the front court that needs to get more physical. I think that's where everyone looks to, but it needs to start with the guards and with the perimeter players. And then you have a little bit more flexibility in what you want to do. Then you maybe bring in more length and athleticism in the front court if you have the physicality on the perimeter. But you didn't have physical play on either aspect of those positions this year. And I think that's the biggest thing. You can make up for a few deficiencies in the physical lane there if you have one or the other, but Indiana didn't have both or didn't have either. And that's the biggest thing. So I think you need depth in the front court, but I think you can overcome physical play and true dominant forwards if you have dynamic playmakers, physical guards, and size in the backcourt. And I think that's where you have to start if you're Indiana. And then you fill in the front court. And I think that's a slight shift of what I thought earlier in the season with how the roster was put together.
Don't disagree with that. And now the focus shifts to next season, to next year's roster, but also, well, why didn't Ristic and Sisley play a little more? I'm just curious why they, just to get them some minutes, especially when you have Darren talking about the physicality of the league. I would think, unless it was just, he felt it was just too much at the time, but I would have thought that there would have been a few more minutes to steal here and there for Indiana.
No, I especially with the Trent Sisley, but I mean, it's hard to say, right? Look, this group found its rhythm, and no one can really deny that. In that, you know, winning 4 out of 5, right? Beating Purdue, beating Wisconsin, beating Oregon, UCLA, and so at that time, right? You went heavy on Nick Dorn. You went heavy with multiple shooters on the floor. And tried to ride that wave as far as you could. Obviously,
some of those guys gave glimpses of what it could be, and it just
Look, I mean, if in a coach's mind, obviously, no one's in Darren DeVries' mind. He's very open, right, to the media and explaining why he does certain things. But if you're looking at who they played, you went with guys who were older, who had been around the block a lot longer, who were more physically mature from that aspect, trying to probably offset what they lacked in physical play already. Not saying that, you know, it was a huge mistake, or it wasn't a huge mistake to bring in Trent Sisley. I think he definitely, you know, should have been in the rotation at least to a certain extent to provide some spot minutes around media timeouts, even if it was just in the first half, right, to keep some of those guys fresh, because it's not like, you know, they lost the game typically in the first half. It was always the middle portion or the middle segment of the second half where a lot of either leads that they had turned into deficits, or a lot of deficits grew into, you know, deficits that they weren't going to be able to come back from. And that goes back to, you know, a lot of the coaches and a lot of players talked about fatigue, whether that's mental fatigue or physical fatigue that comes from guys playing too many minutes. And I definitely think the rotations at times were probably not to the extent that they should have been. But I don't think, look, as good as I think Trent Sisley will end up being, and I think every fan hopes that he stays in Bloomington for the entirety of his career, however long that may be, he was not going to, in my opinion, right, make this an NCAA tournament team. Look, if you're relying on a freshman who regardless was only going to play about 12 minutes a game, 10 minutes a game to turn some of those losses into wins, then the season was, in my opinion, already lost before it started, right? I mean, you had enough pieces on this team that should have made the NCAA tournament, and no one can deny that. All they needed to do was win one of those additional games that they had in their back pocket for 35 or 39 minutes that they failed to turn into a win. And that's all they needed to do. It's not like we're talking about a team that went, you know, and lost, it got blown out in every single game. They got blown out down the stretch here. Yeah, absolutely. But it shouldn't have even gotten to that point, right? It shouldn't gotten to winning against Northwestern in the Big Ten tournament to keep your season alive. It shouldn't have come down to the Northwestern game, even at home 2 weeks ago. I mean, this team had enough on the roster to make the tournament. And I know we're talking about a team that or a program that obviously has so much history, but I talked about this after the first Northwestern game. This team is a mediocre program right now. And I'm not saying that expectations need to be lowered, but realistic expectations need to be addressed head on that, hey, this team just needs to find a way to get back to the tournament. That needs to start being the baseline again. And there's no way to get back to the expectations of being a Sweet 16 team, being an Elite 8 team, being a Final Four team, unless you make the freaking tournament. And this team has done that now twice in 11 years. And so the inability to get there is where things are falling off. And that's why this team was good enough to do that. And I think that's where the frustration comes from. Not necessarily, and a lot of national people think the fan base now is frustrated because this is another non-Final Four team. No, I think this team, this fan base understands that, hey, you need to make the tournament if you want to try to get to a Final Four. And the fan base now is annoyed and sick of the inability to be one of the 68 best teams. Here we are talking about,
and they should be. I grant that.
Exactly. No, 100%. And we're talking about an Auburn team that is four games under 500 and one in SEC play and one game above 500 overall. And they're likely going to get in. And you're telling me that Indiana could not even muster up enough wins or quality wins or just games in general?
Well, let me ask you quickly, which more deserving, Indiana or Auburn?
Who's more deserving?
Yeah.
In my opinion, Auburn, because they won a game in the conference tournament.
But what the hell does that have to do with the overall body of work?
They have a much better overall metrics than Indiana does.
Okay, now see that I buy.
Look back to the non-conference. Like I said, they added Michigan, they added Houston, two teams that have a realistic Final Four expectation. Indiana played Marquette and Kansas State. So,
well, also
neither deserve to be in.
But yeah, you know, and I'm not making excuses. But when you're in the first season, Burrow had this stuff set up. I mean, and I'm talking about the elder Pearl. It's like having a head coach and your dad on your side up here doing everything else that he can to grease the wheels for you. And I'm not talking about getting the job. I'm talking about the schedule. That stuff was already in place. So, I'm not going to make excuses. The hell, they should have been in the tournament. They had their opportunities. They didn't. And that falls squarely on Darren DeVries. Now, we've only got like 1 minute left. What, going down the stretch, they were 17-6. They were 17-6. And then, boom, all they have to do is you can three-putt. You can literally three-putt. I equated this to parring out weeks ago, which is all they had to do. They don't do that. They pull a Phil Mickelson and they shake it on 18. You can still three-putt. And they don't. And it's like, are you kidding me? So, the people don't want to, I think they're, like you said, they're tired right now. Let's move on to next year. I don't know that DeVries, I think he underestimated the Big Ten, playing a 20-game Big Ten schedule. And he underestimated the talent needed. And he underestimated the talent on hand. So, but I think he learned, and I think that they have the tools a lot. So what's up next for you? You've got 30 seconds and I'm counting.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's now, a shift. It's a shift to spring practice for football. Obviously the transfer portal opens up here in a little less than a month for basketball, which is going to be a huge deal with the assumption that a lot of transfers will be coming in. But right now, spring practice starts in 2 weeks. Pro Day, April 1st. And then obviously the NFL draft right around the corner where likely we'll see two Hoosiers in the first round and a number one overall draft pick. So a lot of football-heavy content. Obviously, transfer portal is going to dominate the basketball realm.
Hoosier.com, Alec Lasley. Appreciate you. Sorry, buddy. Got to go.
Indiana football.
Josh Pose, Inside the Hawk. Coach, was there a specific time in that second half where you just kind of saw a different thing from your team? It looked like they had a sense of urgency at the beginning, and then it kind of petered out late.
Yeah, it was interesting to start the second half. Just there was a stretch in there about 3-4 minutes in. It felt like Northwestern's defense had really, really cranked her up a little bit, gotten physical, started slowing our movement, and then we weren't able to, get by people to go get to the ball to go make a play. So you ended up with a lot of just a little windshield wiper offense. And again, and that's it's been something that's kind of hurt us a little bit, especially these last 7-8 games in the second halves, just not getting, you know, able to find a secondary way to score has been a problem for us in a lot of these games.
Okay. Up front?
Thanks, Darren. I recognize you guys are on the bubble. If Sunday comes and you're not in the field, I know this is maybe a hard question to answer today, but what do you feel like got established for this program this season in terms of, you know, you talk about principles and things that will outlive just this roster. What do you feel like kind of you at least kind of sunk roots into this program this season if this is your last game?
Right. I told the guys, like, it's a great group to coach. I think their practice habits were really good all year. You know, they've represented themselves, our program, in the first class manner, and you know, all these guys came, I mean, outside of Tucker, really with not much to go off of, you know, Connor a little bit. When you're putting that many new guys together and their ability to, you know, maintain a really good locker room throughout the season, I thought, you know, was pretty impressive by them and you know, what they did, the way they carried themselves, even during tough times. Like I told them, there's no going back, you know, and every season you're going to have, you know, whatever amount of games that you'd like to have back. And, you know, certainly we felt like there was a little more in there for us that, you know, we would have liked to have gotten done. But these guys continue to stick together even during a couple of these losing streaks and stuff and continue to, you know, maintain positive and work and do things the right way. So
That's Darren DeVries answering Zach Osterman at the Big Ten basketball tournament up in Chicago yesterday, or day before now. Days are slipping away, Zach. Zach Osterman joins us from the Indy Star. And, of course, Indiana season is, we don't know that's come to a close, but it's just crazy, so weird, because in any other year, this wouldn't even be a consideration, but this bubble is so ungodly weak, which this cannot be helping the NCAA president in his quest to yet expand it, when two consecutive seasons we've seen this bubble be literally like a pile of Charmin.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, that's probably a wider philosophical discussion about just like the state of basketball, the way conference sort of realignment and consolidation has maybe changed. You know, the calculus of who winds up on the bubble and how, you know, my stock and trade answer to anyone who asks any more about tournament expansion is if the TV networks wanted it, we'd have it by now. And it's telling that we don't. I think it says something that, you know, I think it says something pretty clearly without saying it out loud, that there is this desire from the association to expand the tournament all the way up to its president. And yet we haven't expanded, because if the TV networks wanted that inventory, if they were willing to pay for it, I think we would have had it by now. But I think it underscores, to your point, you know, just the justifiable argument that we just don't have enough, you know, good teams. I mean, we don't have enough teams to justify all this right now. And there's, you know, it's, I don't know, the sport is in a funny place, because if you look at, you know, some of the, you know, if you look at some of the metric conversations, especially on a, you know, sort of like an advanced analytics side, some of the teams we've seen the last couple of years have been, you know, maybe some of the best in the history of college basketball. You know, last year was, by certain measures, the best Final Four we'd ever seen. You know, this year Duke's got the highest KenPom net rating, I think of all time. And you know, KenPom's net rating goes back to like 1996 or something. I mean, like there's a lot of data going into that suggests that at the top end of the sport, we are seeing, you know, some of the best basketball we've seen in
and that goes for football. I mean, the last two seasons, I'm not talking about Indiana. I'm just talking about in general across. It's the parity has been amazing and fun.
But there's a feeling, not unjustifiably, like you don't have to go very far down the list to find, you know, what we're talking about here, which is a lot of sort of drifting toward mediocrity. And I don't mean that with anyone, to your point, I don't mean that with any one specific program. I mean that more with the idea of, you know, especially, and again, I don't want to get overly philosophical with this, but I think especially in a world where we've clumped all of these high major teams into conferences that are too large for them to ever genuinely have balanced schedules. And so you'll get teams that will just kind of, you know, have weird gauntlets, or they won't play anybody for a while. I mean, college basketball is in a funny place because so much of realignment was driven, as we know, by football and by the appeal of football. College basketball, I think, is still reckoning with some of the places that it's been taken by that consolidation. And I don't think it's been necessarily universally good for the sport. And I think we're seeing, you know, that manifest itself now.
Absolutely. And I know fans just have a very difficult time adjusting to it. And Indiana fans have a tough time adjusting to it because they're still trying to just, man, they've had to adjust to so much. They just wanted to get back to respectability and consistency in that regard. And that just hasn't happened. And now these things were kind of laid in the lap, NIL and the transfer portal, which kind of one would have thought, wow, there's a golden parachute, and that still hasn't manifested itself. But I think that they're heading in the right direction. I think there were just a few things I just talked about with Alec Lasley, but I think Darren may have underestimated the Big Ten, underestimated the talent needed, underestimated the talent that he had. But regardless of that, it's you can't heap Archie Miller and Mike Woodson and that frustration and all of that onto these guys yet. Hopefully they'll get the grace and the opportunity to get to next season. But next season, it's not like it was 4 years ago when you get 4 years to show the progress. It's got to be here now, man. It's a new now world, Zach.
Yeah, no, I mean, and listen, you're right that at least in a purely sort of theoretical sense or philosophical sense, Darren DeVries shouldn't have to pay for the sins of his predecessors, but we both know that's not how it works. You know, that the longer this program goes, and it's been a long time now, the longer this program goes, you know, not restoring some sense of baseline competitiveness, the more the weight of the anxiety and the frustration, or on the other side, the apathy within the fan base is going to weigh down whoever is in that job. And, you know, it is possible in the same breath to say that a coach in a specific season has done a good or a bad job, while also allowing for that not to be some sort of direct indictment of the direction of the program, for better or for worse. But that's, you know, that's a world in a vacuum, and that's not where Indiana is right now. We obviously both know that. I think, you know, a lot of people watching and listening know that too. And listen, I will bang the drum as loudly as anybody, and I have, and I've done it publicly. I've done it when I've had conversations with people privately. This fan base is passionate. This fan base is invested. This fan base is powerful. We saw that with football. I've seen it with basketball before. Like any fan base, though, it can turn too toxic too quickly, and that toxicity can become incredibly damaging. And people don't want to hear that, but it is true. I have heard that from players. I have heard it from coaches. I have heard it from families. I have heard it from, like, you know, you and I both have conversations with people in basketball outside the IU bubble. I have heard it from those people again and again that it's not just, you know, it's not just sort of the, you know, the fringe, that the loud minority that it does become pervasive in people's minds, and it does impact recruiting. It does, it does change the way that certain players or their families or, you know, coaches or whoever see a program. Like, it is a problem. It is a problem. And I've had people who said, well, if Kentucky had the 35 years Indiana's had, Kentucky fans would be this way too. And I say, that's probably true, but that's not your problem. You know, if you're an Indiana fan, you don't care what Kentucky would hypothetically be after these last 35 years. That's not your problem. Your problem is
at Kentucky fans right now.
Yeah, well, that's true too. I mean, yes,
they're not exactly happy.
It's not a competition to see who's the least or the most reasonable. You don't like it. Does not matter what North Carolina's doing. You know, Indiana's got to worry about Indiana, and it can become a problem. It genuinely can. And I've seen it across multiple coaching tenures. I've seen it in recruiting. I've seen it in staffing. I've seen it in the way it affects the team on the floor. Like, it is a problem. And I say all that to acknowledge that I don't really know how to square the circle, because the flip side is Indiana has been to 2 tournaments in 10 years. I've been on this beat for 18 years. If I'm allowed to go back to my time at the Indiana Daily Student, I've been on this beat for 18 years. I have covered 4 teams that finished with a winning record in Big Ten play. Like that number baffles me. Like in that period of time, Nebraska, which wasn't even in the conference for all 18 of those years, has 4 seasons with a winning record in Big Ten play. Nebraska has 7. I have the number somewhere in one of my notepads. I looked it up the other week. Michigan has like 14. Purdue has something like 15 or 16. Like, Indiana is not competing, and I'm not telling anyone who is here, I'm not telling them anything they don't know. But Indiana, we're not even talking about, you know, not being Final Four caliber or the expectations are too high or whatever. Indiana's not even competing at the top end of its own conference. And it's not really even coming close. And that has been true. You know, I use the 18 years partly because that is my time on the beat, and I'm ranting now. I apologize, or I'm on a monologue. But also partly to make the point that that's 4 different head coaches, 2 ADs, 3 ADs, really. Rick Greenspan was the AD when Tom Crean's. Rick was on his way out when Fred Glass was like basically AD in waiting when Tom's first season started. But still, that's 3 ADs. That's 4 head coaches. The conference has expanded 3 times in that time frame. We have renovated Assembly Hall. We have seen all of these facilities improvements. We've literally seen Indiana win a national championship in football. And this program has just constantly just beaten its head up against the wall, trying to find even a baseline level of competitive success again. And so while I will be the person that will say fans create these problems, it is a self-defeating cycle that you know, they don't want to hear it, but like they can become, not are, because the flip side is they can become part of the solution, but they can become part of the problem. But I also look at these numbers and I look at what I've covered for the last basically 2 decades, and I say, I don't really know how to blame them. And that's if I could square that circle for you, frankly, I'd make enough money that I'd never do a radio hit again. I would be living on that horse property that the coaches are always supposedly out scouting
down in Florida, baby.
Well, no. I'll stay here, but I'm living out next to Billy Donovan and Brad Stevens and, you know, John Calipari, whoever else bought horse property out in. We live actually like kind of up the hill from a small horse farm, and every once in a while we're driving by and I tell my wife that's where Billy Donovan lives. That's where
that's, you keep selling that, man. Yeah. I'm not someone who goes out of my way to say, oh, hey, do this and y'all got to relax. But recently I said, hey man, you can't lay I understand the frustration for everything that you just said, for every reason. But I also said you can't lay the failures of whether it's the last 2 years of Tom Crean or the entire tenure of Archie Miller and Mike Woodson and all that at the heels of this guy, these guys yet. But I said, if you want to be best at somebody, it's the IU administration. That's where things went awry. But it's not been one person is the weirdest thing, as you just pointed out. This has been a circle that it's beyond perplexing on how it has played out. Now, there were some dynamics in there of late we know about as well, but it's still it is mind-boggling and perplexing, because you would think that many major candidates would be clawing their way to get to that job. And I don't know that that's the case anymore. And I'm not talking about last year. I'm talking about maybe 4 years ago. I don't know, but there has to be a reason. It's not because you can't win in Bloomington and not because you don't have talent in Indiana, which with the portal lot that has changed, but it's just unbelievably perplexing.
No, it is. And like, I mean, listen, I think there are, like, you know, I was looking at the comments and some people said fans aren't the problem. I want to be clear. Fans, number one, are not always number one. Fans aren't the problem.
They didn't make the hires.
They can be a problem.
Yes.
Like, they play a role. And again, I know some people don't want to hear that. They do. Like, I'm just telling you, they do. But the flip side is, we've seen this in basketball. We just saw it in football. They can also be an enormous part of the solution. And when I say they are not the problem, or because they are not permanently the problem. That's the other part of this. I'm not saying they are the problem 365 days a year. I'm saying they are, they create some of the problems some of the time when things get toxic. I say it that way to say there are plenty of other people and entities and to your point, like administrative decisions, whatever, that, you know, that at whose feet the responsibility for what's happened to this program rests. You know, like you said, people who make the hires, people who've strategized around the program. Let's be real. The coaches too. Like, as I said, you can criticize Darren DeVries for some of what happened this season. That, I'm not saying you can't. Like, I'm not, I think he would tell you, you can't. I mean, he's been, it's striking to me that he's kind of gone out of his way already to start talking about some of the things that maybe that he did not know, that he did not realize he didn't know when he took this job about roster construction and what the Big Ten would require and what needs to change and so forth. You know,
Greatly open with the media, and I made that point yesterday, and someone wanted to say, oh, don't sell us garbage. I'm like, it's not about selling you garbage. It's telling you the
fact. Yeah, I know. I think he's trying to just take account. I think he's just trying to be accountable. And listen, that only goes so far. Like, he's got to implement those lessons, and like that, that's got to bear fruit down the line, or all the
accountability in
the world won't matter. But
I mean, and quickly, I mean, I've said that, hey, I'm not there. I have not been negative this year, and there's no reason to be, and I'm not going to be next year at the end of the season. If this is the conversation, then there's a problem.
Yeah.
But that's a year from now, and they get even into this offseason with things they didn't have last year, Zach. You know, they got here in March. Well, now they're going to be ready when the portal hits. They're going to be prepared before the portal. They've got Ryan Carr. They've got a lot of other things they did not have access to last season.
But like, even through that, and I would maybe talk about like the last 15 years or so, because that's when I think the last 15 or so years is about the time that the financial gap closed enough for Indy. Because like, if you go back through the 90s and 2000s, there's a lot that happens with Indiana athletics in general that is defined by bad financial decisions or a bad financial situation, a little bit of both. That handicapped a lot of different things. Like, my favorite story that I like to tell is when he was raising money for Cook Hall, Calvin Sampson told the board of trustees that the most he could do with Assembly Hall from a recruiting perspective was walk a recruit into the building, point at the five banners, ask him to help him win a sixth one, and walk him back out again because the facilities were so bad he didn't want to show recruits. He didn't want to show the recruits. And that was basketball, and this was the mid-2000s. And I know Kelvin Sampson's persona non grata, but in that job, this is what that person was saying, I don't have. The last 15 years or so is when Big Ten Network money, Big Ten media rights in general, if Indiana's not making as much as Ohio State, at very least Indiana's making enough to start investing in facilities, to start paying more competitively for coaches, et cetera. You think about in that period of time, Indiana has won a national title in soccer and played for what, like three more. Indiana has been to the College World Series. Indiana has enjoyed historic, unprecedented success in women's basketball. Indiana has restored swimming and diving to something approximating, you know, basically its greatest sort of iteration. Gold medalists, silver medalists, Olympians, you know, every 4 years in the roster of Indiana, either current swimmers and divers or alums is impressive. Ray Lustre, Johansson, they're always at the Olympics coaching with Team USA and so forth, or you know, some team. You know, we could go on about like the other things, like softball has you know, risen. Women's soccer has enjoyed sort of some halcyon moments. Volleyball looks like it's pointed in the right direction. And again, I say this, Indiana football won a national championship. In the last 15 years, all of that has been accomplished by the same people and the same administration and the same infrastructure and the same apparatus in general. And I say that because I don't want to single any one person out as somehow being the reason for the success or the failure. The same apparatus that has not been able to get Indiana basketball right has accomplished all of those things while also realizing record revenues, renovating or replacing almost every facility on the athletics campus, moving Indiana into a much more modern, you know, competitive structure, structurally, financially, and so forth. Like, basketball is increasingly the outlier. If we looked around and we said Indiana can't get basketball right, but Indiana's bad at everything else too, then we just say, well, these are bad decisions. The people making the decisions, the administrative sort of, you know, structure is just not adequate. But the administrative structure has accomplished all those other things in all those other sports, whether it's competitively, financially, or infrastructurally. And basketball remains the thing that Indiana just can't figure out. And I don't know exactly what that means. Like, I can't sit here and tell you that I have a hard and firm idea that, you know, this is the reason why that is the way it is. But I do think it is relevant. I do think it is worth pointing out.
I agree. It's crazy. And when you come up with the answer, I just want to watch you become – I'll be your stable boy.
That's right. We'll be out there. I don't think I've ever even ridden a horse. I love the horse property thing. Like, I've never met a college basketball coach or really a college coach ever who wanted to talk about horses with me. And they spend so much time in their office – that it's just like, what are they going to do with the horses? Like, what is it about horse property? Every coach that I've ever known that lived in this town lived like out on Russell Road or maybe down by the lake.
Yeah. Like,
but they just lived in a subdivision in a $4 million house. Like, what? Like, every time the shop is open,
it looks beautiful. It looks beautiful. You probably didn't know, but over my shoulder there, that's actually a portrait, but that's actually me right there in Las Vegas at the World Series finale at team roping. I used to compete in pro rodeo back in another lifetime.
I love
that. Zach Osterman from the Indy Star.
Dan Seals. Everything that glitters is not gold. Let's go.
There you go, baby. Make sure you're giving him a follow. We appreciate him and always appreciate you, sir. Have a great weekend with the kids.
You too, Jim. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. There it goes. Zach Osterman from the Indy Star joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio, back with more. Bill Bender will join us next after we take a pause for the cause.
Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Friday. You made it through the weekend. It is time for the weekend, and there's plenty going on. If you want to watch some basketball, man, it is going to be lit all weekend, and the games will be freaking phenomenal as we're getting into the quarter and semifinals and of the conference championships, of course, wrapping up on Sunday, and then it's Selection Sunday. Looking forward to fill out the bubble. I got to reach out to Pete, you want to put together, see if Pete wants to put together a board for us, as we always try to do that, give some swaggy away. You know, earlier we talked about Braden Smith. He's stat hunting, baby. He got, 16 assists yesterday against Northwestern, as he is chasing down. He's trying to chase down Bobby Hurley from that vaunted Duke era. Couple things. He's already played two more games than Hurley played in. And number two, I think Bobby Hurley won him a couple of national championships along the way doing that. Yeah, so good, but he's how far away? He's got 1,045 assists in 142 games. Hurley is number one still with 1,076 in 140 games. So 42, 52, 62, 72, 34 assists away. Bill Bender, speaking of assist man, what a segue. I may not be able to do anything in this world, but I think I'm the king of segues. I wish I could make a compilation of them. It might be the only thing that I do well. But I was just talking about Braden Smith. Man. 16 assists yesterday. I'm not going to say he was stat hunting, but 5 points. But that aside, not sure he'll get enough games. They've got a tough one coming up now as the games get tougher in each conference this weekend going forward. Looking forward to all these games, though, man. This is going to be an absolute blast. But in the Big Ten, of course, today alone, that was yesterday. Come on, man, catch up. You've got Ohio State, Michigan, that should be easy. Wisconsin, Illinois, that should go chalk. Purdue, Nebraska, 50-50, coin flip. UCLA, Michigan State, that should go Michigan State's way. But I think that Purdue and Nebraska is a coin flip. But that's just my thoughts, Bill.
Skipping through Michigan, Ohio State, not a throw the records out the window type guy here. I think that'll be a game. Whenever they hook up in the big, I do, because Ohio State's playing better. I could be wrong. I think they've gotten hot.
Well, they are. No, they are. They've had a good end to the season, unlike say Indiana, who went on that skid. Ohio State's played well down the stretch when they've needed to.
And I know when these two hook up in the Big Ten tournament, the games are typically competitive. They're very rarely. I'd have to go back and look. I don't think there's been a blowout. I the one that sticks out obviously is the Evan Turner shot when he made that shot against the Michigan team that was trying to crawl into the tournament. But there's they don't, that one I always say, it doesn't require kindling or lighter fluid. They'll be ready to go when that ball's tipped off. The Nebraska game with Purdue, absolutely, that's a coin flip. As you look at the Big Ten seeds here, that'll be a really interesting game, because I think Michigan's safe as a one no matter what happens today, at least in my opinion. It really comes down to, are Illinois and Michigan State going to be twos? Is Nebraska going to be a two? Can they play their way into that? What seed is Purdue? They've got Purdue as a three, Jim, but I think they're more of a four.
I don't see how in the world you put Purdue in the top 12. They're not a top 12 team.
Now, I think they profile more as a four, especially, which I don't understand. I think they might end up being a three, but there's two teams behind them, maybe even three. Gonzaga, Kansas, Virginia, I have St. John's on the four line. I think St. John's will end up being a five, but they should be a four. You know, I think they're that kind of team. So, yeah, I mean, Purdue's seed is probably a little tenuous going into the weekend.
Yeah, I would take Kansas, especially right now. Darren Peterson seemingly healthy. But four good Big Ten games today to watch. And then speaking of jumping over to the Big 12, also that was, see, that's today. Yeah. They only have two. So because they only, how many teams they have? I forget in the Big 12 conference.
They've got 16, but they're down to the round of, they're into the
semifinals. Yeah, they started earlier.
They started earlier. What you need but to do.
Iowa State and Arizona. I mean, that's a fun game already. Iowa State, just a gritty team. And Kansas, Houston.
Yep.
That's Friday night TV watching right now, man. There, get your popcorn. And I love that matchup. I love the Big 12.
What you need, really, Jim, is one of these. This is what I do. I print it out.
Is that your TV sheet?
That's the ESPN schedule for the, you know, like literally the schedule for the day. And I'll go down and write the scores as we go through the day. And, you know, you track it that way. And I kind of break it up into segments. Obviously, you'll have the early set of noon games and then you cross those off. You update your bracket and who you think, you know, what our bracketology looks like. We try to keep it as real time as possible. But this morning I'll spend the next hour or so kind of going through it and seeing where I missed. I think one of the things that's really troubling me is the bubble, obviously, because the bubble's gross and not, it's full of bad teams and average teams.
Worst, has to be the worst in the history of the NCAA tournament.
It's not a good bubble, and yet another reason, PSA, to not expand to 76. And then number two, I think Miami's going to get in. It's just a matter of what I have no idea where they're going to be seated. You know, my guess is 10 or 11, perhaps 11, because they lost to UMass. What a disappointing loss that was. And then I think if Akron wins the MAC, they can either just put those two teams on the same seed line and get away with it that way.
What if Miami loses in the first round of the NCAA tournament?
Well, I mean,
and what if they lose poorly?
Yeah, then there will be repercussions, I think, in the following seasons because we're going to stump for them. But I go back to, you know, like I said, my freshman year.
And I know you're a MAC guy.
I am. I'm going to defend the MAC here because the last time the MAC had two bids, it worked
out. And I'm not doubting him. Don't think I am. No. I'm just bringing up the questions.
No, you're right, because here's the concern is that we've had conversations about, you know, in Indiana or in Auburn or New Mexico, New Mexico right now is first team out, and I actually think they should probably be in. What do we do if Miami gets hammered? Well, I think they'll pay the penalty over the next couple years with the teams like this, like Indiana State did a couple years ago. That said, last time the MAC had two bids, it was my freshman year of college. Kent State played Temple tough, lost the 6-11 game. Wally Zerbiak led Miami to a couple victories. Those Kent State and Miami teams were really good. I think Akron's good. I think Akron's legit. And, you know, what's the harm in putting both teams in? If you really have a problem with Miami, just put them on the first four. That'll be good TV because everybody will be wondering that question you just asked, Jim. What if they get beat by a lot?
And they will probably draw a P4 team. Mm-hmm. Well, not necessarily, but very possibly. Because the last four in VCU, SMU, Texas, Lobo, the New Mexico Lobos, well, of the one I'm looking at from Mike right now, that may have changed after last night. If it did, I don't have access to that insider information. But Indiana, unbelievably, still in the first four out, but they're the last of the first four out. Auburn up in front. Bruce Pearl stumping for Auburn with a one game over 500 record and what, four sub 500 record in the SEC. I'm sorry, I'd rather see, I don't know, there's a lot of other teams I'd rather see than Auburn. But especially after having to listen to Bruce Pearl openly stump for them on national TV on stop that. I know ESPN loves the drama, and I like to say drama, not drama. Mm-hmm. They love it, but it's for a quote unquote, which we know that journalism has gone out the door, but a journalistic outlet. You're doing the exact opposite of that, man, and you're promoting it.
Well, and another thing that's tough to sort out right now is these, for lack of a better word, average to below average, mediocre SEC teams on the bubble. You know, which one are they going to leave out? Texas, Texas A&M, Georgia lost yesterday. Oklahoma's kind of making a last-minute, last-ditch run here. Actually, Oklahoma should be ahead of Auburn in the bubble talk, at least in my opinion. They've won six in a row. They're playing really well. They hammered A&M last night, so they may be able to play into the bubble. But right now, the SEC, in my opinion, will have probably 10 tournament teams. I don't know if they need 11, especially with that. And Missouri's another one. I don't know if Mizzou will be let in or not. Whereas in the Big Ten, you're looking at, I'm guessing you're going to have 8 tournament teams, and Indiana probably going to get left out. You know, Indiana, but is Indiana any worse than that crew of Missouri, Texas, Auburn, Oklahoma? They're in that range. They're just all mediocre teams right now.
Auburn has a total. How many quad one wins does Auburn have?
Four.
Four. Well, okay. That's not bad. So that's bubble worthy, I should say. But yeah, I mean, Indiana doesn't deserve to be in the tournament. Let's be honest. I mean, and IU fans don't want to hear this, but who wants to watch that team? I mean, what did they give you against Northwestern? Are you expecting something more? They played Northwestern twice in the last 2 weeks. One of them was at home. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the tournament, the spoils, the fun of the tournament. Who's going to be where? Who's going to do what? Who's going to succeed out of the SEC and every one of these other conferences? Does Florida get a number one seed?
Yeah, I think they can play into that over the next couple of days. The SEC tournament, for all I was kind of talking about these average to bad teams, it's got an interesting day ahead today. You know, Florida's got a chance to play into that. The Big East tournament, as somebody pointed out on X this morning, the four teams remaining are originals. Seton Hall, Georgetown, St. John's, UConn, throwback Big East tournament over the next 2 days. Those aren't like expansion teams. And I love Big East basketball. I love the history of it and all that. And does that build to a UConn-St. John's three match? That could be a lot of fun. Looking forward to the entire day of Big Ten basketball. And as we get into you know, the other conferences, I'll follow the MAC over as the day goes on. And tomorrow is one of my favorite days of the year, too, because you'll have, I think it's like 8 or 9 conference tournament championship games tomorrow. It's just an awesome day. I mean, maybe even 10, you know, because we've got about half of the bids have been decided, the other half over the next couple of days. It's just an intensely fun day of basketball. Like I said, you got to print it out, put it on your clipboard, get your markers out. That's how old school I am. And I don't apologize for it. I love it.
It's a lot easier to deal with. Yeah, I'm trying to, there's so much that has changed. I've actually got one of your latest,
that should bracket. Be pretty up to date. So
yeah, that's what it looked like it is. So Illinois, there's Illinois. What and Michigan State? Yeah, I think they're both could be two seeds, but I just don't see Purdue as a three seed. I don't see how that happens. But if they win today, maybe that changes. They can play their way into whatever. But more importantly, does the Big Ten? Forget about who wins the stinking conference tournament. They've got to get busy in the NCAA tournament, but we've got time for that, man. So I want to see the big boys play. I want to see Michigan and Illinois go at it again, I guess. That's the two best teams in the Big Ten. But that's why they play the games. What are you looking forward to in today's games? Where across, no matter who, conference, doesn't matter.
No, you know, you talked a little bit earlier about that Nebraska-Purdue game. That's going to be fun. You mentioned a team earlier that I think is very, I don't want to say polarizing, but Kansas is interesting to me because Kansas is sitting there on a 4 line right now, but they could win the national title. They're probably that one team outside the 3 lines that has the talent with if Peterson is who he is. You know, and plays like he made his free throws. He made plays last night. They could make a run. they've always got enough talent to do it. The question is, can they do it? You know, and then obviously in the SEC, is Kentucky going to win a game? Is Arkansas going to win a game? Alabama and Florida played really well. That should be a fun quarterfinal round in the SEC. And then, you know, if you're looking down the progression for like bubble teams and that kind of thing, you know, keep an eye on San Diego State and New Mexico. They're all, both on the bubble. They're both kind of on the outside looking in. I like I said earlier, I think the Lobos should be in the tournament. I just don't know who they've got to pinball out of there. And those are two teams to keep an eye on. If Seton Hall wins, they could push up a little bit. Nobody on these bubbles likes Seton Hall. I've kind of had them on the bubble as that third or fourth team out for about a month. We'll see if they can make a last-minute push.
Both Duke and North Carolina dealing with injuries, substantial injuries, but is this going to affect their seeding?
I don't think it'll affect Duke. It might affect North Carolina a little bit. They may drop a line because they've got Miami and Clemson beat them last night and Louisville's in that range. So I could see North Carolina maybe slipping a line. Duke survives the scare last night. You know, they still have Boozer. It's similar to what they were dealing with in the ACC tournament last year with Cooper Flagg getting hurt. We'll see if they can get one of those guys back. But, you know, obviously when you have those injuries, Cameron Boozer, you're going to rely on him more. You're going to rely on that backcourt a little bit. You're going to need some guys to step up, including his brother Caden. But, you know, I don't think Duke, I think Duke's number one, and they still have a chance. I think Duke and Michigan are kind of playing, and maybe even Arizona to some extent. Those three teams are playing for the number one overall seed. So if one of those teams wins their conference tournament and the other two don't, I could see them making that team the number one overall seed. They're all around the 30-win mark.
Bill Bender from the Sporting News. Keep following him. One of our favorites. Appreciate you, brother. Enjoy your weekend.
Hey, we'll catch up next week. Thanks so much, Jim. Appreciate
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Bill Bender, appreciate you as always. More coming up right after these messages. Appreciate you. Welcome back. It is Friday, baby. I hope you get to get away. Just enjoy your weekend however you wish to. There's a lot of basketball that you can watch. As a matter of fact, over the next 3 weeks, 1, 2, 3, 4 weekends, actually. The fourth weekend, though, will be the Final Four in Indianapolis. Getting you caught up on some things. Indiana football has a decommitment from the four-star wide receiver Jahide Brown out of Louisville. We'll talk more about that next week. Ravens. The nixing of the Max Crosby trade with the Raiders Sunday, it's looking more and more like the Ravens were possibly playing some guys against each other there. They signed Trey Hendrickson to the same position, and it's apparently they have a reputation for doing those sorts of things, so that's kind of weird. Lamar Wilkerson set a new single-season scoring record for Indiana men's basketball with 464 points. First player since Brian Evans to average 21 points a game all the season. Indiana's previous single-season scoring holder was Don Slunt with 459 points, and he was on the 53 national championship team. But something that I will point out, Lamar also fell just shy of Steve Alford's 107 made three-pointers on the season with 103, I believe. On the one hand, the three-pointers Lamar was shooting were substantially further back as opposed to the top of the key. But as in case with Don Slunt's scoring record, if you take off 103 points for that extra point per three-pointer, which Don Slunt didn't have, well, Don Slunt is still current, easily ahead as the number one scorer. Just pointing that out. Big Ten coaches chose Fred Hoiberg as the coach of the year in the Big Ten. The media chose Dusty May. Keaton Wagler was your freshman of the year. Yaxel Lindell Cyborg, the player of the year at Michigan, and they also have Ade Mara, the defensive player of the year. So defensive player of the year, coach of the year. Yeah, Michigan basketball's got it going on. Not that you need me telling you that. So there's that. Appreciate each and every one of you. What you got heading for the weekend? A lot of basketball out there with the wind out there. It's not, boy, not much else out to do. It's not going to be too bad. Temperatures up in the 60s, so looking forward to that. But basketball, baby, across the board, and some great games, like I said, all day. Then tomorrow, you don't know which games you're going to have, but they're going to be great ones because we're getting down to the nitty-gritty in these conference championships. And then Selection Sunday, be fun. So we'll try to get that set up. I don't know if we can get that done and that quick enough of time, but hopefully, it's not that difficult. So we'll have a board for you guys to share in on, and we'll give away some merch and have some fun with that. Man, it has been a fun week. Appreciate Alec Lasley, of course, for joining us from thehoosier.com. Zach Osterman from the Indy Star, Bill Bender from the Sporting News, and most importantly, each and every one of you. Without you, we have no reason to be here back on Monday to do it again. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I'll see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.